Today on Seahawks Forever, Seaside Joe will be joining me to share his in-depth thoughts on the Seahawks roster and their prospects for the upcoming season, and a very interesting player comp he has for Geno Smith that you're going to want to stick around to hear. And I'm going to pick his brain about how he continues to be so prolific in producing his daily Seahawks newsletter. Seaside Joe joins me next.
Welcome to the Seahawks Forever podcast. In-depth analysis on everything Seahawks. And now, here's your host, Dan Vians.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Dan, and as promised, joining me now, Seaside Joe. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thanks, Dan. I haven't done a podcast in a while, so hopefully I'm not too rusty. I'm cutting those ums out right now.
It's like riding a bike. I've been doing this in some form or another for 25 years. And my 89-year-old father told me the other day, he said, "Can I give you some constructive criticism? I think you do a really great job on that show, but you say too much." So it's a tough one. Unless
sounds like parents.
Yeah, exactly right. He will always be my toughest critic. I want to start right at the top, kind of with a global look about what you're doing now. A lot of people might know you from some things you've done in the past, most notably field goals and your role that you used to have there. You've been doing this, first of all, this daily newsletter, what's the streak up to?
Today is 1,556, I think.
Consecutive days of producing a newsletter without a break.
Yeah, it wasn't the plan in the beginning. And it probably wasn't even the plan at 1,000 to keep going. But if I can do it, I'll do it. And so every day I've been able to do it.
Why the choice to do a newsletter as opposed to more traditional web-based writing?
Well, I was still at Field Goals when I started it. And I think that at that time in my life, I was just looking for something that could be my own. You know, I think that when you're at a Seahawks website, maybe perhaps, or any type of website with a specific category that people are going to there for, maybe they're going there for that thing. And I felt like, what's something that could be, if you just want to hear from me, and you know, now it's under the persona Seaside Joe. So it's just like, if you just want to hear from me and what I have to say, go maybe try this out as a compliment to what I do at the Seahawks website. So eventually, like, there were circumstances outside of everyone's control that moved me to another website, but that allowed me to still continue to do Seaside Joe. And it was just in the newsletter, it felt like it was something that was so ancient that maybe it would be fresh again, I guess. It was something that felt unique. It felt like something that was not that everybody was doing, you know. And I've always tried to do maybe just something that wasn't, I don't want to say in a crowded space, but maybe just something that felt unique or fresh compared to what everyone was doing. Not that what everyone is doing is necessarily a bad thing, but it just felt like an outlet where I wouldn't have a lot of attention and I could just grow and try and get something out that was my own. And I didn't mind the fact that I wasn't going to get a lot of attention by doing it. I just had a sense that it was the right thing to do. And this was, you know, several years before moving to Substack and actually having it grow kind of to where it's grown so far today, which was never the expectation. It was never about, you know, getting paid subscriptions or doing anything like that.
Right.
It was just some way for me to do something where I could directly reach the people that, for whatever reason, wanted to hear my thoughts on the Seahawks.
What's the old saying? Something old is new again. Something old is always new again. Yeah, something like that. Anyway, so at one point, so you said the goal at the beginning wasn't to do it daily. When did you realize that the demand was there and also the desire on your part to make it a daily newsletter?
It was just sort of a weird set of circumstances, like a perfect storm, I guess, because I was going through a transition phase in my life of trying to like be a new version of myself, basically. And that January, I just sort of was like, I need a fresh start in my life. I stopped drinking at that point. You know, I was just like, I'm going to stop drinking. Again, it wasn't like I'm going to quit drinking because I don't think now that I have a drinking problem. It was just like, I want to be really focused. And so drinking just sort of doesn't help there. So it was like, okay, I'm going to stop drinking. And I read this book by Tim Ferriss that was The Tools of Titans, which was just from excerpts from his podcast of the successful people he had interviewed, and said this is sort of what they have in common. And there were several things in there that appealed to me, and I thought, okay, what if I apply this to my life? Some of those including meditation and intermittent fasting and sleep, and there were certain just like little things in there that I thought, okay, let me try to apply this into my life. And then I also got this gift that was a gift of a free meditation learning session over 4 days. And there was something called Vedic meditation. And the thing that the guru, really pounded home to me was the difference in Vedic meditation is that it's a non-negotiable daily habit. By that meaning, you do not negotiate away your meditation. You do it no matter the circumstances. And we believe in meditating for at least 20 minutes a day, once in the morning and once in the evening. And if you do that every day for a year, you will meditate 730 times. And I said, immediately I said, then I'm going to meditate 730 times. It's just like what I wanted to do. I like doing things to their maximum potential, I guess, or at least I like to challenge myself and see, can I do this? I'm very competitive with myself. So I have, since that very first day of that meditation, which was over 4.5 years ago, I've meditated twice a day for 20 minutes. I've not missed one. And that's, you know, 1600 or 1700 days in a row. So there was that. And then I said, okay, let me apply this to other things in my life. So I've got up to this point about a dozen non-negotiable daily habits that I apply in my life. And when I started the newsletter, like I said, I started it just to sort of have a different outlet.
Yeah.
And then 1 day, 2 days, a week, a month, 100 days, a year, it just kind of kept on growing, and deciding to just keep it up, just see like the challenge. How far could I keep this going? I would not be surprised if some people said, that's stupid, you know, what's the point? But the more that it just grows, I just feel like I don't know how I would go to bed at night if I didn't write a newsletter about the Seahawks.
Interesting that you know, an outlet that many people would view as just a way to talk about a sports team that you love and to sort of delve into a hobby every day is actually an example of bigger changes you made in your life.
I feel like the people who have been with Seaside Joe since day one, or even in just the first year, they must see some sort of change in me that I can't even see. But I know that I've changed so much in the last 4 years. And there's a clear, you know, just sort of a clear through line of that growth, or, you know, I don't know if I'm better, worse, or growth, you know, but the evolution of Seaside Joe and who I am personally, the writer, I know I've gotten better through that. And now it is sort of a meditation of sorts in its own. And definitely it's so vast. My fiance would probably be able to tell you that I think about writing about the Seahawks all day long. So it's just something that I can't really get away from.
Well, we'll have her on the show next. And we'll get into that.
Yeah, definitely.
Talk about the challenges of a daily newsletter. Is this, because certainly as a writer, there are days that you feel more creative than others, I'm sure. Do you literally write every day, or are there some days you kind of stack things up?
It's, I would say, you know, out of 365 days a year, I probably write 355. We went on a trip a couple weeks ago, or a week, I don't know, week or two ago, and I had to stack a couple days, like you're saying. I had to schedule it out. But to be honest, I've been writing almost every day since 2011. I was initially hired by Danny Kelly, and I'm sure that he would tell you that there were times when he had to force me to write, maybe in the summer, you know, where it's harder to come up with ideas and stuff like that. But I would attribute some of it to my ego, thinking that I'm so smart, that I have so much, I'm so clever, that I have so many good things to say, that I must have something to say today. And that, you know, that ego, that delusion probably forced me to have to come up with ideas where there doesn't seem to be any. But if I'm being, you know, completely transparent about it, I have a dozen ideas every day and I have to think about what the best one is. And forget the others, or maybe I'll write two articles that day or three articles that day. But the ideas, I don't really have a problem with it. So what I would say is maybe some people who get the newsletter say, I didn't need this today. You know, maybe there is those days where it's like my idea for an article wasn't that good, you know, and maybe so there's those days where it's like, oh, you know, the old adage, slow news day, which, you right. know, when you write for so long, you hear that so many times, it's like, yeah, it is a slow news day. What did you want from me? But it and you could say, yeah, maybe you don't write a newsletter every day, but the ideas are okay. I mean, I'm okay with being able to come up with the ideas, and I don't feel at a lack of being able to write 3,000 words a day for some reason, for whatever it is. I don't have any athletic talent. I don't have any, you know, I've failed at so many other, I did a podcast and I wasn't good at that. I didn't feel very good at that. I didn't feel good at making videos. I didn't feel good about writing tweets even, you know, it's like a very specialized skill. I just felt good about writing, I guess you could call them blog posts. And now it's a newsletter. And for whatever reason, that's the thing that I feel like I can do.
In some ways, does it take some of the pressure off, as opposed to when you write for a web-based entity, so much attention is paid to making the headline compelling enough, having it, teasing people, getting them to click. This is a newsletter you're pushing out to people that are expecting the content to come to them. Does that make it a little more comfortable?
That's interesting. You know, I think, you know, there is the element of at Seaside Joe, we do show up in Google search results. And, you know, even though it's a newsletter, you can, some people, not as many, but some people find us through Google and searches. And, you know, it is important to any creator, I think, to make sure that anybody who might like what you're doing can find it. So writing headlines, you know, is, again, it's something I've done 15,000 times. Mm-hmm. And so there is an element of, okay, this is going to be a SEO based headline, or this is going to be a headline that when you get the email, I hope that it gives you the information that you would want to, you know, to need to find out what's inside, because I'd much rather you read the article than didn't read it, for sure. So it's, to me, it's like writing the headline is how would I see the email on my phone, you know? And so if it doesn't say enough in the first three words, then it may just pass someone by. But I definitely want people to know, you know, that there's something in there for them to read. And it's funny because people throw around terms like clickbait so easily, readily, you know, flippantly, loosely these days. Anything that they don't like is just clickbait. But I think what's true about clickbait is, come read this article or come watch this video. Here's the title. Then you go and it's not that. Clickbait is not, did the Seahawks overpay Draymond Jones, right? So that's not clickbait. That's a question. And the question isn't meant to be like, oh, I'm trying to get a negative emotional reaction out of you, or some sort of emotional reaction out of you. It's clickbait is Seahawks. I mean, I see it everywhere on YouTube, you know, where it'll say like Seahawks trade for Aaron Rodgers, you know, like that is clickbait, where you click on it and it's just not even that. Yeah. But definitely I want headlines that make people want to come read the article,
of course.
But also by delivering in the headline, hey, this is, I think that I've written an article you should want to read. Here's what it's about.
I'm glad you referenced that particular piece because one of the things I appreciate about the newsletter is you don't just write about newsy events or roster changes or speculation of 53-man roster projections, but you ask questions, compelling questions. And sometimes when I'm watching game broadcasts or I'm watching telecasts talking about the Seahawks, sometimes I just feel like the right questions aren't being asked or that maybe only the easy questions are being asked. You did that piece that you referenced a couple of days ago, and the headline was, did the Seahawks overpay for Draymond Jones? It's a question. It's a premise. And you even began the newsletter by saying, I know before some of you even read this piece, you're going to jump down to the comments and tell me how ridiculous it is that I'm even asking this question. What was the impetus that day that you were writing that to want to explore that concept?
Yeah, usually, you know, a lot of ideas will come from just reading something on the internet. You know, a lot of times it'll be something as simple as going to overthecap.com, just browsing who the Seahawks are paying and how much they're paying and how, and something will just be like, oh, okay, that sparks a question in my brain. Is that good enough for an article? Or it'll be the stats from last year at profootballreference.com, or it'll be a tweet, or it'll be something, you know, a YouTube video, whatever it is. That article in particular, I was reading a blog post about Draymond Jones because I'm preparing an article about sort of the origin story, the history of Draymond Jones, to get to know who he was as a high school player, as a recruit, as a college player, all the things that led to him coming to the Seattle Seahawks on the contract that he did, because he is such a unique signing for Pete Carroll and John Schneider. They don't usually spend that kind of money on outside free agents. And so it'll be interesting to see how he fits in. I wanted to get to know what the Broncos writers and the Broncos fans thought of Draymond Jones, because to me that says a lot. You know, I know a lot about the LA Rams. So when the Seahawks signed Gerald Everett, I was like, I don't think this is a good signing. I've seen Gerald Everett play a lot of football.
Yeah.
And you're going to be disappointed. And it's not because he's not like going to provide a few good plays or that he's not a good athlete, all these kind of things. But if you actually watched him every week, you would just know how much of a letdown, kind of underwhelming it kind of was, the Gerald Everett experience, which I just think you don't get unless someone is watching the team every week and really, you know, having that sense of it day in and day out. So with Draymond Jones, I want to know what the Broncos writers thought. Did they think that the Seahawks made a good signing, or did they think that they wanted the Broncos to really bring him back? And I read this post and they said that Draymond Jones projected to make $7 million a year, which didn't sound right. You know, it definitely didn't sound right, but it did sound like, okay, well, they're also not trying to get the Broncos to franchise tag. They weren't, you know, they were like, we want Draymond Jones back, but if he leaves, fair enough. So then it's just a valid question, I think. I like to write about the Seahawks as if I'm not a Seahawks fan, because then I think you're getting the expert opinion. And when I say expert, you know, I'm just a guy who has followed the team, like a lot of fans, every day for a long time. And we're very lucky in that they haven't changed regimes since 2010. So they're very consistent with what they do. So I just wanted to know, is this an overpay? I think like the overarching feeling I have about all free agent signings, especially outside free agent signings, is that the vast majority of big contracts are overpays. You have to overpay almost any free agent to get him on the market, which is why so many free agent contracts look bad in retrospect and don't end up playing out the full year, you know, the full contract, because there's competition for that person's services. And, you know, it may just be, hey, he's going to try and catch the team that is the most desperate to pay the most money at a certain point in time. And I just feel like, okay, if you could draft Draymond Jones and get the same production, that'd be, you know, of great value.
Right.
Long story short, you know, I think that the Seahawks are probably paying Draymond Jones more money than what most teams would want to pay a player of his skill set. And so by that definition, it is an overpay. But by another definition, teams win Super Bowls sometimes because they overpay players.
Yeah.
You know, because they're like, we're going to pay more money here, and we're going to, because we're saving money at our offensive tackle positions, like the Seahawks are doing right now, you know? So I think that there are ways to spin that as, yes, Draymond Jones is overpaid, but you have to overpay some players in the NFL. All of the good teams do it. And it's just how you get, look at Frank Clark, you know, on the Chiefs. They traded too much for him. They paid him too much money, mm-hmm. and he helped them win 2 Super Bowls.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just sort of how the business works.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You've obviously written a lot of content over the last calendar year on Geno Smith. One of the more remarkable stories I can remember following the Seahawks my entire life, a guy basically had been written off by the league as just a journeyman backup for the rest of his career, sat on the bench, backing up Russell Wilson for 3 years in Seattle, becomes a upper tier quarterback worthy of a bigger second contract. You wrote a piece, I think it was yesterday's newsletter, comparing him to just making a very interesting player comp to me, to a former NFL MVP quarterback. What do you see as the similarities potentially between Geno Smith and 2016 version of Matt Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, I think the clear similarity, first and foremost, is that they're both very accurate quarterbacks. And, you know, they both have had that showcasing opportunity, leading the league in completion percentage at certain points, right around 70%, but just, you know, very accurate. And, you know, certainly, as I said in the article too, Matt Ryan probably he gets the benefit or the credit, you know, to say that, you know, he's a better quarterback than Geno Smith if we're talking about, you know, the course of their first 10 years in the league, because obviously Geno didn't play as a starter for 7 years, and Matt Ryan, you know, made a ton of starts, made a ton of playoff appearances, had some good games. But I think we sort of overrate, and maybe I'm just talking about myself, maybe, but like, I think it's easy to overrate the gaps and the differences between, say, the 7th best quarterback and the 17th best quarterback. It could really come down to a couple plays a game that add up over the course of the season, mm-hmm. where you're seeing like, okay, yeah, this guy made a couple more mistakes, and those mistakes, you know, they'll really kill you, and those additional touchdown passes or whatever it is will really help you. But then it's also, as I was writing, you know, the supporting cast is so beneficial, yeah. and the coaching staff, I mean, we've seen what Kyle Shanahan has been able to do with Jimmy Garoppolo and Brock Purdy and just that host of quarterbacks in that San Francisco 49ers offense to get the most out of them. And Matt Ryan, by all accounts, by most accounts, would be better than any quarterback that Kyle Shanahan has in San Francisco, and also Julio Jones, and also, you know, a very strong running game, and all these things around Matt Ryan, as opposed to Geno Smith, didn't really have a good opportunity with a good supporting cast and a strong coaching staff. And, you know, I think we, without bias, can say that the Seahawks, from everything that we've heard from former players, players who go around the league, have a very positive, strong culture where they feel very able to, you know, just perform well and be better selves. It doesn't work out for everybody. But when we're comparing the Jets to maybe the Seahawks, you know, maybe Geno Smith is just set up better to perform last year than at any point in his career. So then going into next year, is it really that outlandish to think that Geno Smith, with arguably what could be the best wide receiver trio in the NFL, with a very good set of tight ends, with 2 offensive tackles that may, you know, that were pretty good, you know, last year, but were only in their first years and could be actually good this year, potential upgrades in the interior of the offensive line, getting his 3rd year of continuity with Shane Waldron, getting his 2nd year of continuity as the starter in the offense, having 2 potential starting running backs behind him, And maybe, you know, and I think this can't be understated, maybe a few opportunities on the schedule to really, you know, if the Seahawks want to pad his stats a little bit, try and run up the score, try and be, because to me, this is the most important thing you got to do in the NFL today. You got to be able to score points. You know, it's like, I want to see teams that can put up 35 points when they need to put up 35 points. I understand that, you know, Pete Carroll loves to win a game 17-7 or 17-3 or whatever it is, and a win is a win. But when I look at all the teams that are winning the Super Bowl, it's 35 points, 38 points. It's high-scoring teams. It's high-scoring offenses, because when it comes down to, hey, now you have to beat Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles. We saw the Rams a couple years ago with all their offensive weapons and their talent on offense. The Bucks with Tom Brady and all the weapons that Tom Brady had to have in 2020. So I think it's imperative for the Seahawks to let the passing offense and the running, you know, the rushing game go off a little bit this year. So I could see them working on, you know, that aspect of the game. And maybe he puts up 35 touchdown passes, cuts down on, you know, some of his turnover worthy plays. That being said, I think the team is legitimately high on Drew Lock and are interested to see what he'll look like this training camp and getting more comfortable with the offense too. Not because I think that the Seahawks are in, you know, are preparing to make a change at quarterback. I just think, like, Geno Smith, if he had played for the first 8 games like he played in the last 8 games, he may have been benched in the middle of last season. You know, and the way that the Seahawks finished last year, they need to not start like that this year. And the amount of money and incentives that they gave Drew Lock was at least interesting to me. And so I just throw that in there to say, I think that Geno Smith's ceiling is very, you know, pretty high. And I think that the Seahawks are also prepared, you know, just in case of the worst case scenario. But they've clearly, with Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Zach Charbonnet, Kenneth Walker, Charles Cross, Abe Lucas, Noah Fant, over the last 14 months have done quite a lot to try and get better around that position.
The Geno Smith story is fascinating to me. And I think one of the reasons that people still aren't comfortable getting fully on board with him is because we've just never seen anything like this. Well, not never. There's Steve Berline, Rich Gannon, some guys later in their career have kind of popped, but to sit and not get a snap of any meaningful way for 7 years like he did and come out and do what he did is pretty remarkable. And you make a great point about Drew Lock. This is going to be a fun preseason. I suspect Geno Smith's going to get a little bit more of the Russell Wilson treatment this preseason as the clear-cut starter, not getting as many snaps, and Locke's really going to have an opportunity to show what he can do. Final note, I want, I'm going to throw a little attaboy your way. This was a remarkable draft in a lot of ways, and one of them, the least of which, Seahawks went corner at number 5, which so many people were unwilling to even consider the possibility of because they had never done it before, never taken a guy higher than 90 with Shaq Griffin, let alone the fact, you know, just don't even pay any attention to the fact that they haven't had opportunities to take guys that high. On the morning of the draft, with everything leading up to it, all the thought and all the analysis you'd put into it, your gut instinct, and you wrote about it, was that you were, I think you pegged it at like 90, 95% sure that Devin Witherspoon was going to be the guy that day. What made you so sure?
You know, I was right there with everybody else, and for many, you know, the last few years, every time a cornerback would come up in conversations in the draft, first, second round, or anything of that nature, I would say the same thing. Hey, look, the Seahawks don't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, the Seahawks haven't been in that. They haven't really taken that shot. They feel very confident in their ability to find guys later in the draft. So I was there all the whole time, and even probably a month before the draft. And then it was just the power of deduction, crossing names off the list, saying I got off of quarterbacks very early on in the process because I didn't I just got off of them. I said, if they were that good, as we saw with three of the top four picks, they won't be available. So I just started crossing off the quarterbacks. I was like, that's going to be a waste of time. For me, I felt that was the way that it was going to be. Just like last year, a lot of people were focused on quarterbacks, Malik Willis, Desmond Ridder. I said, that's just not, I don't think so. And so that got rid of a lot of names. Jalen Carter, I was with for a long time, just thinking, yeah, I mean, this could be the one. But then at the same time thinking, but we don't know. If they've crossed him off the list, then this is also a waste of time. And eventually I was just like, when I got to Devin Witherspoon, which was I was watching a video by Rondae Barber, and Rondae Barber was comparing Christian Gonzalez to Devin Witherspoon. And he said a lot of very complimentary things about Christian Gonzalez. And then he said, but he's nowhere near Devin Witherspoon. And he was talking about how Christian Gonzalez doesn't finish off plays, that he plays not to get hurt, that he you know, that he's not very physical. Hmm. And then he said that Devin Witherspoon was the absolute opposite of that, that he finishes plays, that he plays to, you know, that he's the most competitive guy. And it just sounded like, this is so Pete Carroll. Everything that he's saying about Devin Witherspoon is not just what Pete Carroll wants. It's what the Seahawks lacked last season, and that they've lacked since all those players from the Legion of Boom went away. So there was that element of it. And then it was like, I was never really thinking that it would be Tyree Wilson. Who is really left at that point? There weren't going to be any other real positions of note. It was really just came down for me between like Jalen Carter and Devin Witherspoon. And then it was just, if I, what I said around Devin Witherspoon was, he's the guy that Pete Carroll takes into every conversation about every other prospect they could draft and says, make me want you more than I want this guy, because I really want this guy. He plays so hard. He's very competitive. He's very physical. He's great against the run. He's great in coverage. He's great in press. He's great in man. He's great in zone. He's great in all of these things. He's just not, you know, he's not 6'5 like Richard Sherman or whatever, however, 6'3. You know, he's not, there was those little things that you could pick apart. But what we really saw from the Seahawks is they lacked this attitude, really. They don't put they don't put any real fear in offenses. Offenses just go like, let's just go after them over and over again. And you could just sense that with Devin Witherspoon, he's not the biggest guy, but you can sense that he's that guy who you just feel like is gonna lay a hit on Debo Samuel or Christian McCaffrey or one of these guys early in the game to say, not this year, not this time, it's not gonna go down this way. Because you got to take out some of those zones, those lanes, those plays that, that teams like the 49ers want to run on you. You got to take them out somehow. And so he fit on the team. It like there was a clear need there. He was he had all the physical traits. He had all the game traits. He had and he just had the mental traits. All of those things that it said, I'm really not going to draft this guy because it's pick 5 instead of pick 10. You know, I'm really not going to draft this guy just because we've never drafted a cornerback. Like you said, what opportunities have they really passed on?
Yeah.
Last year, they were looking hard at Sauce Gardner. I think that that was a very reasonable assumption to make. And so, and also, the game has changed. The amount of money that cornerbacks make changed. The amount of cornerbacks going in the top 5 has gone up of recent, of late, with names like Stingley and Gardner. So it was all just sort of there to be like, maybe those other years weren't the right time, but if the Seahawks pick Devin Witherspoon, he's going to be a fan favorite. He's going to be a, like the choice that makes you feel good, that even if for some reason it didn't work out, you felt very good about the choice you made. And with Jalen Carter, it was like, well, if this doesn't work out, then you also don't feel good about the choice you made. So that's kind of where I was like, I think it's Devin Witherspoon. He was the 7th or 8th highest odds to go to the Seahawks at pick 5. But I was like, I don't think it's anybody else. So I'll just say Devin Witherspoon, with the caveat that maybe they would trade down, but I didn't really see that happening either.
Seaside Joe, tell people how they can find your newsletter and subscribe to it.
yeah, you know, I'm still trying to figure this out, but for some reason, I think you have to go to www.seasidejoe.com. I don't think seasidejoe.com alone will work, but you can also just Google Seaside Joe. Or here's the thing I say to people now, you can go to the Twitter, but I found it was in your bio.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like Seaside Joe News on Twitter, but I want to be like very clear to people that I don't use anything except for the newsletter. I don't tweet. I don't have a Facebook, an Instagram, a TikTok, another website, anything like that. I believe very strongly in like just doing this one thing. And so, you know, that's where all of my effort and content goes is www.seasidejoe.com. And yeah, I assume that it's going to keep going for many more days in a row. So hopefully people check it out.
I will put the link to the correct site in the description for anyone that's interested. I believe also if you have the Substack app, you can just search Seaside Joe and it'll come up there and add it to your subscriptions. It is well worth the cost. Thank you very much for your time today, sir. Would love to have you back on the show once the season starts.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That's going to do it for me. Tomorrow, Sanjeet T from the Football Scout YouTube page joins me. He has a really fascinating take on the ceiling of one of his favorite Seahawk draft picks from day three. And the thing I love about Sanjeet's breakdown, he's not a Seahawk fan. Join me for that. And we look at some of the other Seahawk draft picks as well. Until then, this is Seahawks Forever. I'm Dan. Thanks for joining me.